Penn Jillette in Las Vegas, Nevada, talking over the free FM with the secret Tour de France rider, Michael Goudeau.
That's right.
Who is, for those of you who don't know, riding the Tour de France in his living room, going the same amount of time that the big boys are, and eating blueberry pie while he's riding. So he's not losing as much weight as maybe some of the athletes. But
They're eating 8,000 calories a day. I think they're beating me still.
Okay, so they're eating more than you, but they're going faster than you.
They're going faster than
you. But it's anyway, he's riding the whole Tour de France, which I think is the definition of existentialism. If Camus was riding today, you would figure hard into that. You'd figure hard into that part. And it's a little special day. It's a the tiny special day is that I woke up this morning. I was woken up by my wife having no idea where I was because I went in yesterday for dental surgery. It turned into a root canal. And it turns out if you weigh $3 and you're a really big guy, that putting you out, they put in like, I think 15 needles to try to get me down. And so they bring in elephant tranquilizers. Yeah, they're trying to get me out or to just to not care. And I was trying to be tough. You know, I would try to pretend I didn't feel it, so I'd let them drill without it being dead, because I'm thinking, I'm a tough guy. I can do that. How bad is that, you know? I went through NOM. You know, I'm watching it on TV. And I thought I could take this. And they start to drill. When they're drilling right directly into the tooth, you're really tough for that. The first moment it hurts, you're tough. And then it strikes you, oh, this is going to keep up. And you, So they kept going out of the room, coming back, putting more needles in me, going out, coming back, putting more needles into me. And finally they put, I guess they put Valium under my tongue.
Yeah, the mouth pills, yeah.
Yeah, and then I got funnier. I was starting to say loopier things. I said a little bit loopier things. And then they put Halcyon, is that another drug?
Yeah, Halcyon, yeah.
They put that into me. And I remember asking about a fish that they had brought into the room. There was a very big fish in the room. And they assured me that the fish wasn't there. And then I woke up about 12 hours later in my bed. And somehow doctors, nurses, passersby, longshoremen, the same people that mobilized the whales that came up on the beach, had drugged me, got me into the car, and put me up in bed. So I woke up a little bit woozy. And once again, you know, I say this on the air all the time, if you have children, especially 15, 16, 17-year-old children, make sure they do drugs. Make sure they experiment, because human beings should understand what it's like to be high. It should not be a brand new experience, and they should do it when the stakes are low. So, to that end, we have a very special guest. And believe me, if I knew he was going to be on today, I would have been billboarding it all week. But it's a special surprise guest and somebody who talked to me. You talked to me when I was just starting to get high. He called on the phone, and I said I was a little high. And he said, it's not that bad.
I said, it's not so bad, is it?
And that is Trey Parker of Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Woo-hoo!
Matt Stone's not here.
No. Nope.
It's just Trey Parker. You know, when they do the ads for Apple and they have, like, Dr. Watson, and there's a full ad that says think differently.
Right.
And I said to a friend of mine, how do they get Dr. Watson to do that ad? And he said simply, no crick.
right.
So how do you get Trey Parker to do a radio interview? No, Matt.
Right. That's true. We desperately try to get away from each other when we're not.
So now you've been away for a while. You were like in Japan and stuff?
Yep. And we've been down. We've been on hiatus since May. We're back in September.
So. Now, do you quit several times a year?
You mean, do I want to quit? Do I pull a Dave Chappelle?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to pull a Dave Chappelle. I was actually really pissed off when Dave Chappelle did that, because I've wanted to do that for 10 years and had never quite had the guts to do it.
You had it in your notebook.
But yeah, at the beginning of every run, I'm just like, oh, we're out of ideas. This run's going to be terrible. I can't do it. Too much pressure. And I want to leave. And Matt's always the one that kind of talks me back into the, you know, into the show.
How far have you gotten? Have you ever skipped a day or two of work? Or?
Yes. We've gotten to the point where it's Saturday, there's a show airing on Wednesday, and we have no idea what it is going to be about.
No idea at all.
No idea. No. And we're seriously about to call Comedy Central and say, sorry, you're not getting a show, we're leaving, and you can sue us. But then we sort of pull a show out of our butt somehow.
Now, but the shows that you've done lately, the two-part Cartoon Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the best show you've ever done. I mean, up there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was great. You know, every season we're kind of, you know, we're definitely getting better every season as writers. Like I think when we watched sort of the first and second season, we're like, wow, we really didn't know how to write then, you know. But we've sort of come along, and that's why it's still fun, you know, because we still do everything on the show ourselves. So it's like we're more like a rock band. We like to think of it that way, you know.
Yeah, well, that makes a big difference, you know. I think that the smaller the groups that are doing things, the better they are. Part of the reason you're so good is there doesn't seem to be the feel of committee everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And let's talk, just because this is always fun, we have drawers full of very unpleasant letters that cross over into death threats. How many of those do you get?
Shockingly little. I mean, shockingly little. And I guess it's... We just have such a brand now, you know, that it's sort of the South Park thing. It's almost, we've realized that it's like a story will be going around. It's like, oh, did you hear this show last night? They did this, that, and the other. And people will be like, oh, my God, that's terrible. What show was it? And they're like, South Park. And it's like, oh, well, that's South Park. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like that's sort of the attitude out there.
You've gotten the pass.
Yeah. And everything, you know, I guess Comedy Central might get more than we do. But even they say they get shockingly few.
It's, well, what it is, there's this whole, I believe that freedom of speech is very, very alive and well in this country. What you have is this group of about 2,500 crayon writing, you know, losers.
Right.
Who are led by some sort of quasi-minister.
Yeah.
And are told to write letters about everything. And they're not the problem. The problem is you then have Hollywood, who so much want to be martyrs.
Right.
You know, that they collect these letters that clearly, these are letters from people who couldn't pass a driving test.
Right,
you
right.
Know? They're not buying Lexuses or whatever your show sells.
They have no effect on
whatever
show
your show sells, they're not
right,
buying.
Right.
You know, so a boycott means nothing.
No.
And yet they take him really seriously.
Yeah.
You know, when we get stuff, you know, we had, we did our chiropractic show.
Right, right.
We had, what was it? It was a huge number of letters. It was like 100. We had 100 letters from chiropractors who said they would never watch our show again.
Well, now too bad.
But it was better than that because we have a live show.
Right.
So those 100 letters came and they got no more reaction. So after the show, you know, we're out in the lobby talking to folks. And after the show, these like 25 really cute women, like really like flirtatious cute women, all come up to me at once as a group, and I'm going, okay, I can get out my journal again. There's another story coming. This is, and they're all smiles. And they go, Pam? I go, yes. And they go, do you know who we are? I said, well, no. I mean, I know who you are to me, but I mean, who are you to you? And they said, we work for the National Association of Chiropractors, or whatever the name of it is, and we came to your show tonight to see the show and to talk with you afterwards. I said, okay. And they said, we want to tell you that we are going to make sure no chiropractors ever come to see your show again. And I said, is this a boycott? And they said, it certainly is a boycott. And I said, I think an important part of the boycott is not coming to see our show ever. I don't think you come and deliver. Because I don't think we've ever had a night when we had 75 chiropractors
right.
in the audience at once. That's money in the bank.
That's great.
So I don't get it. And there's also those groups that that go back and forth attacking you and then attacking us. Like
yeah.
the guys that have the, you know, Christian League for
yeah,
Decency.
Yeah, that Catholic guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who just, what's it, him and his wife.
And it's every time. What's really funny is that we've always said, I mean, as soon as we started South Park, everyone was like, you know, wow, it's so great. You know, the religious right must really be trying to censor you guys, but you persevere. And we're just like, yeah, although we've never really heard from anyone, you know, and then, you know, it's just always been this thing that, and you can see why Michael Moore does what he does, because it is so easy to take that side and be like, yes, I am championing free speech. Yes, I am standing up for, yes, I am being censored. I'm being oppressed. And the truth of the matter is, We're totally rich. We're totally, like, all we've ever done is whatever we wanted to do and people throw money at us. So it's like, yeah, we've never been censored.
The other thing is, you know, all the people that talk about these horrible times we're going into and how terrible the censorship is, they don't seem to realize that Eminem had the number one album.
Yeah, exactly.
The number one album.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he's, not like Eminem's doing okay.
Right.
Or no one's, you know, stopped him. Eminem had, you know, with negative things to say about the president.
Right.
Very negative. With obscenity, the number one album in the country.
Right.
And there's no way the number one album in the country is counterculture.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
They tried to fool us with that with the Beatles.
Right.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
They tried to pretend this is really outsider stuff.
Right.
It has to be. Howard Stern, when he had his real show, was the number one show in the country. Nothing he could say by definition could be outside the mainstream.
Right.
He was mainstream. But, you know, you get that fear. I mean, and everybody wants to blame everything bad on these right-wing Christians.
Yes.
And they don't notice that most of the censorship over the past 20 or 30 years has come from broadly the left.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the only, I mean, honestly, I think I've told you this before, but, you know, that we've never really heard from anyone. The only time we actually had a group of people mad at us and writing us letters and calling us was right after Team America came out. Mm-hmm. And it was our liberal friends that
sure.
were like, how dare you? And, you know, and really their attitude was, you know, don't you know what you're doing? The election is in a month and you release this movie. And we're like, we're not trying to change the election. You know, it's not the point. And we even, like, friends of ours, we're like, you know, rocker friends, and said we're pissed off. And we're like, wow, you know, we've never had a group be upset at us for what we've said until now.
But did you have friends that were, I mean, fairly close friends?
Yeah. I mean, a few of them, there was only a few that were close friends that were upset. One of them was Les Claypool, you know, from Primus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he wasn't like, I hate you guys, I'm never talking to you again. But he was really like, why would you do this? Why didn't, you know, he's like, so many of the liberals, that movie started and they wanted it to keep going the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the movie starts off and it's just really bashing what America does. And then it kind of takes this turn in the middle that's like, yeah, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And they just wanted it to keep going and keep going. And I heard from some friends that they saw it in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And that they said it was a shocking experience because they were sitting in the theaters and they said, you had people standing in the aisles cheering and just going crazy. And then about halfway through the movie, it started getting quiet. And then about 10 minutes before the movie ended, people were walking out. And I was like, that is perfect.
I would have, because of being a fan of yours, and having met you once or twice, you know, people would come to me and say, now, just tell us, in Team America, which is, you know, cool and the puppets and all, at the end there, where they're doing that kind of political stuff, what kind of irony are they doing there? What's their real position? And I said, you know, I haven't talked to them a lot. We're certainly not close friends. I can't claim hours of conversation, but I can claim a couple hours of conversation. And I said, I do believe that when it gets to the end of the movie, the putting aside comedic
right.
coloring and so on, I believe that's a statement of their political position, or at least a statement of their political worries,
right.
because it's there. And they would just say, well, that's what you're making up. I want to know what they mean by that.
Right.
So they want an interpretation. And I thought it was fairly clear through the whole thing.
It made sense to us.
Yeah. And did you get, I heard a story about Matt running into Janine Garofalo at a restaurant or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
Did you have any experiences like that?
You know, it is really funny how, because we don't go to a lot of Hollywood parties at all. And but we do, like,
since.
Yeah, especially since then. But we do try to go to, like, the Academy Award parties once a year just because,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
it's fun. And so this last Academy, or the Academy Awards right after Team America, there was it was like Paris Hilton was there, who we just ripped on in the show.
Oh, sure.
And Clooney was there, and Alec Baldwin was there. And there really was that we were standing in the corner, Matt and I, and nobody would talk to us. We were like, wow, things have really changed around here. So we left.
But Clooney's still a supporter, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a pretty good guy, and he's a, but we've, we, we kept tearing him apart all year, and I think he's kind of sick of it. So, but I mean, that Academy Award speech he gave—I don't know if you heard it—it was about the smuggiest thing I'd ever heard in my life.
That was the one you did in the cars.
Yeah, the smug alert.
And you can. This is the thing that, you know, if ever you talk to a Simpsons guy, they have this weird kind of, well, of course, South Park can do that. They can turn around in no time.
Right.
And you really can be changing things. What's the closest to the time it went on the air that you changed something in one of your shows?
We basically, our schedule is we come in Thursday morning and we sit around a table and figure out what the show is going to be that week. So it really is more like a live show. I mean, I think it's, of any show I've seen, how they work it, it's way more like Saturday Night Live than it is anything else I've seen. Because when you come to the table Thursday, you have no idea what you're going to do. And we come up with something, and then, you know, you get kind of a basic idea, and you start to come up with some scenes, and we send it to animate. We start getting the animation going. But it's great because it's more like a sculpting process. So, like, Friday, Saturday, we're starting to see some scenes animated. We're like, oh, you know what? Let's have this scene be at Cartman's house instead, and let's do, you know, we can switch that around so much. So by the time, you know, you get to, then we pull an all-nighter almost every Tuesday night, and we get something done Wednesday morning that we can put on the air. But it's like, we've had it get to the point where it's Saturday and we still don't have an idea for a show. And a lot of times those are the best shows, because then it's like, okay, you can, no time to second guess ourselves, no time to overthink this. It's just got to come right out of there. And they end up being some of the best shows, you know.
Well, I was with you. You were doing Team America, and I went out with you on a Tuesday night.
Right.
And Tuesday night over dinner, you were talking about rewriting complete hunks of the show that was going to go out Wednesday.
Yeah.
And going and doing that. But you have, and I think this is, in terms of business, you have just about a vertical monopoly. Don't you?
Yes.
I mean, your little organization there does everything.
Absolutely. We walk out of our building with a tape that goes on the air. We don't go out of house for anything. So, and it's great too, because we have the recording studio there, and then, you know, all the editing. So we can sit there on an editing machine and say, oh, you know what? It'd be better for him to say this right now and have him do that. I run into the booth, do Cartman's voice, get it out to animation, and I can see that done in an hour. You know, animated.
That's amazing.
So it's great, because not only do we do it that much faster than The Simpsons, but I think we actually get to touch the show way more than they do. You know, we get to look at it and change it.
They
and
don't fly
it
to Korea every 10 minutes.
No, they got to do all that in the script. You know, they've got to make sure the script is perfect and locked down, and then they get to, you know, animate it. So,
and there's just a, but you do what I love about the show, and it's never what's talked about. What I love about the show is that the philosophical and moral points are completely consistent and gentle and kind and correct. And in all the articles you read about South Park, even the one that was out saying that you were the conscience of the right wing now,
right,
all of a sudden,
right,
that you are, none of them talk about just the goodness. You know, you do this wonderful job of, if you want to be an absolute wimp, if you want to be a namby-pamby, if you want to be a Pollyanna, and you really want to put that out there, you have to misdirect it.
Right.
With kids swearing and
right,
ripping things apart and all of that. But the sweetness of your shows, I mean, the number of times that they choke me up with just a pure idea. And I do, you know, there's several political points and moral points that I disagree with you on.
Right, right.
And I'm proud that I noticed them.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
you were telling me that there's some people that just, no matter what you say, try to push you over to their side.
Right, right,
say,
right.
Say they don't agree.
Yeah.
But it's really remarkable how much time you take and think about that. It's just, I really don't think I can remember a show on TV that I respected more.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
We're going to take a break. Maybe I'll let you get a word in edgewise. If you call 866-570-PEN, that's 7366, or send an email, penradio@gmail.com. Maybe I'll let you talk to Trey Parker, but maybe not. Give it a try. Trey Parker is here with us, and he is, of course, a guest. That the music coming in on the show is the Mike Jones Enormous Band, and I'm playing bass on that.
Are you? Yeah, that's great.
I'm playing the upright, and Jonesy's playing all the arrangements, and is playing the piano on that. I'm Penn Jillette. Don't you want to hear? I'm Penn Jillette. And sitting with me is Michael Godeau, and our guest today, surprise guest, because he called me when I was heavily sedated and have root surgery. He got himself on that way.
And so I was heavily sedated at a Vegas club.
So very, very clean conversation. Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, one of the things that if you're reading this in history class in 50 years, and they're talking about, you know, the starting of the end of the Middle East and how long it took to percolate. One moment they'll make is the fact that cartoons killed people.
Yes.
And 50 years from now, it will be impossible to understand.
Right.
Completely impossible to understand that a newspaper in Denmark can draw a cartoon and people can riot, burn flags, and kill people. And it was barely understandable living in the real time.
Right, right.
How that happened.
Totally.
And you guys were on hiatus, right?
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden, the you know, the Middle East challenges us to a golf competition.
Yeah.
And Tiger isn't around.
Yeah.
Where were you?
And And so
that's when we needed you.
It was a pretty funny thing because about 4 years ago, we did an episode of South Park called the Super Best Friends, and it was all the religious leaders, and they're sort of there at the Hall of Justice, you know, mm-hmm. and they all have superpowers. And Muhammad was one of them, and he could turn himself into any. In the show, he turns himself into a giant beaver and kills Abraham Lincoln statue. But but so 4 years go by, and we know the show goes into syndication, and we knew that the show was going to be seen by a much wider audience. I was on my honeymoon in late January of this year. And I'm at Disney World on my honeymoon, and I turn on the TV, and there's just, you know, tons of rioting Muslims and cartoon wars along the bottom, and this thing scrolls by that says, you know, Muslims enraged by cartoon, and I was like, oh my God, they finally saw it. And because people told us when we were making it, they're like, you can't do an image of Muhammad. And we're like, well, we're not Muslim. That doesn't apply to us. Of course we can. And so then I'm sitting there watching, and I call my wife, and I'm like, look, they're really pissed off. And I was like, oh man, this is bad. And then it said, you know, Danish newspaper cartoon. And I was like, oh, okay, good. It wasn't us.
Oh, you were disappointed.
Yeah, a little bit. But then I was also, you know, within an hour or so, I was really excited because I was like, oh, we have a first show to do. That's great. We have an idea for a first episode. And I mean, how do we not do cartoon wars? You know, I mean, it's just like so perfect. And we really were disappointed by, you know, nobody rallied. Nobody. It was supposed to be that I'm Spartacus moment, you know, where everyone's like, I'll show the cartoon. I'll show Muhammad. We are going to unite and say we can show Muhammad. And it was a big, you know, I'm not Spartacus. You know, it's like you can see the movie was the guy steps forward and he's like, I'm Spartacus. And the other guy comes forward and goes, I'm not Spartacus. And the other guy's like, not me neither. I'm not Spartacus.
Yeah. That's him over there.
Yeah, that is him. Yep, that's him.
That's him. I'm sure.
But what I was so fascinated by on that was you, and you so often do this in the show, and I don't think anybody notices it, but you so often come down with a very classic patriotism, very classic love of country, very classic love of ideas, and not like the yippies or that movement where, you know, American can be better if we just adopt socialism or something.
Right, right, right.
You tend to be pretty country western down the middle. We love America.
Yeah, we are from Colorado. So.
And your values and so on. And it was so funny that the guy who, the guy who runs the Catholic League and is attacking both of us all the time, he was so upset at the end of you showing such disrespect to Jesus and to the flag.
Yeah.
And it's one thing for someone not to get it.
Right, right.
But for someone not to get it when you're on their side.
Right, exactly.
The statement at the end of that was,
well, then why can we do this to Jesus?
Are you really okay with us doing this to Jesus, but we have to celebrate their religion? It was just, I mean, I could not believe it sitting on the couch at your, and I don't get shocked by South Park, by any of the stuff I think that one would normally call shocking.
Right.
I just get shocked by how it's a perfect thing. I can't believe you've put it in the exact right spot. And I couldn't believe all the Family Guy stuff.
Yeah.
Even your satire of the Family Guy about not doing jokes was just
You know what happened the next day? We aired that episode and we went into our offices and we had flowers on our desks from the Simpsons people. and then we got calls from the people that were doing King of the Hill and they said, give them the message they are doing God's work. And it was all just, there was this whole feeling in the town of like, thank you for saying that about Family Guy. But another funny thing that happened with that, when we told Comedy Central, we're like, okay, we're going to do a show. And because the first idea was we're going to show Muhammad.
Sure.
But he's just going to be a guy and he's going to stand there. The joke was he's going to be on Family Guy so that if anyone, they get pissed off anyone, they'll be pissed off at Family Guy.
Sure.
And so, you know, that was the whole thing. And then they said, no, we're not going to show Muhammad. And we're like, but don't you see, we have to. You have to show Muhammad. You
so
know?
South Park, I'm sorry, Comedy Central actually said to you, you're not going to show
yes,
Muhammad?
Yes, they said we cannot show Muhammad. So we actually had to change the whole idea of that show. We're like, okay, well, then we're going to make the idea of the show that a network won't show Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's now what we can talk about, you know. And
yeah.
And so when it got... Until the week before, we were still trying to convince them. We're like, come on, just let us show Muhammad, let us show Muhammad. They said, no, we just can't do it. And we said, well, do you know that there's a show running on your network right now with Muhammad? And they were like, what's that? And we're like, South Park. And we said, there's an episode we made 4 years ago with Muhammad in it, and you're rerunning it on your network, and so are all these other syndicated, you know, networks. And they said, really? And they had no idea.
It was also really interesting to me that the press... Well, I mean, I don't mean the overseas press, but the American press that was talking about the Danish cartoon, I didn't see, and you must be more aware of this than I am, I didn't see one editorial that said, but South Park has already done this.
Yeah, I didn't see one either.
Yeah, nothing where someone said, you know, they've done this. And I believe, and I don't have too much of an eye for this, but I believe in your opening credits of it, one of the years, Muhammad's in the background waving.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
It's amazing. And you lost Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, yeah. That was another. I mean, it's been a crazy year for us, you know. But that whole thing was we'd been kicking around an idea for a Scientology show for a while, and we always had come around to, yeah, well, we better not do that because Isaac's going to get pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
But then we came up with this really funny idea for a Scientology episode, and we're like, wow, this is really funny. And
you also knew that Showtime would not let us do Scientology.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you had
so you could
me.
Go nan and nan.
Yeah, exactly. That was the main thing. That was the main thing. But we also knew, I mean, we didn't want to be hypocrites either, because we always say and we'd stand behind the fact that either it's all okay to do fun of or none of it is.
Exactly.
You know? And so we didn't want to be hypocrites and say, okay, that's the one thing we're going to touch. So we just did it under the radar. We to him about it because we knew that he would make calls and, you know, lawyers would get involved. And that's the other really nice thing about making the show as fast as we do, is that before anyone even knew we were considering a Scientology show, it was already Sunday and it was going to go on the air, you know.
Right.
So
cease and desist is useless.
They didn't have time. So, you know, the show aired and he got called to the Scientology Center, the Celebrity Center there, and because he'd called us from there and he said, They need me to come talk to you guys, you know. And it was like, okay. So I said to Matt, I was like, you can take this. And I left. And I went home and left Matt there for Isaac. And Matt said that Isaac showed up and you know, Isaac, he's a very gentle man and he's a really nice guy. And, you know, he was really hurt because there were two things. He loved Scientology and he loved South Park, you know, and he was and they were at odds, you know, and so
sure.
And he was being told to do something about it, you know, as a representative of South Park. And so Matt said that he was like, we need you to pull the episode, just don't show it again and don't ever put it on DVD. And Matt's like, well, I'm sorry, we can't do that. And he said, well, I'm gonna have to go tell them that, you know. And it was like, okay, go ahead, you know. And it was just and then This is a really weird thing, because that was in December of last year. It gets to be January, and he starts doing interviews for something else, and we see him on, like, CNN, and they're asking him about it. And he was saying all the right stuff. He was saying, yeah, you know, I was disappointed, but and I think they're wrong, but it's South Park, and they do this to everybody.
Yeah.
And he was saying all the – and we're like, okay, good. You know, he's upset, but at least he – And then all of a sudden, we're starting the next season in March now, and we get the message, Isaac's quitting, from his lawyer. He gets, you know, a formal letter. And we're like, wow, okay, bummer. And again, he has every right to quit, so no, on our part, no hard feelings.
Sure.
That's totally his right to quit. And, and you know, Chef hadn't been a big part of the show for the last 5 years, so it wasn't a devastating blow or anything. Then all of a sudden, this press release comes out from him that's like, I can no longer be a part of that show because they are, they're bigots. Trey and Matt are bigots.
That was the big one.
And it was just, and it went on to say, you know, just bad things about us. And we were like, wow. All right. Game on, dude. You know, it was just like, that was our attitude. And, but what's funny is that since then, since before that press release, we never heard from him. And we have lots of people who we talked to, who were like, his guys, when he was going in and doing Chef's Voices and everything, who were saying, hey, guys, there's more to this than you know, and this isn't Isaac doing
this. Well, I'm going to take a break now, and we're going to come back and talk about exactly this some more.
Yeah.
What is Isaac? So let's take a break right now. We'll be back with Trey Parker of South Park, 866-370-PENN, P-E-N-N, 7366. You probably won't get a call in, but you can try. This is Penn Jillette on the Free FM from Las Vegas, Nevada, sitting here with secret Tour de France writer Michael Godeau and our good friend Trey Parker, who I have to add to the list of aristocrats that we've had on here.
That's
I have
right.
a whole list of aristocrats who have appeared on the show, and there goes Trey Parker right in there now. Right down there at the bottom, because you're the most recent. That's
okay.
all the bottom.
Okay,
is.
All right.
You were talking about Chef Isaac Hayes, and so he was real cool to you.
Yeah, I mean,
then it switched.
Yeah, and then we didn't hear from him, and then that press release that came out. At first, we were just we couldn't believe it, but then after we thought about it, we're like, wow, that isn't Isaac talking, you know. And then we heard these rumors that he had had a stroke, and that you know the Scientologists were always putting him on this weird cayenne pepper thing, you know, one of those kind of things, like to get all the toxins out of your body. And you know, we believe in our heart of hearts that the whole thing was not orchestrated by him, you know, that he was sort of forced to do what he did, which is just horrible.
And what do you think if you bumped into him on the street now? Would he be pleasant?
I believe that it depends on how much they've gotten to him. You know what I mean? Because, like I said, the Isaac that I knew, and he was starting to change. I mean, they were putting him on this weird stuff, and he lost tons of weight, you know, and he to an unhealthy degree, I think. And you know, when we very first met him, he was just sort of getting into Scientology, and he's just this very jolly man, you know, and right, he was changing already, you know, and just sort
of. But in terms of fame and income, there's no doubt Isaac Hayes, Shaft, and all the stuff he did, huge star, very important artist. But at that particular time that he went over to South Park, you really gave him a new bump in the career.
Oh, absolutely. And then for that whole 10 years, I mean, you know, Chocolate Salty Balls was the big closing number he did on every tour. That's what everyone wanted to hear, you know. So you know, he was still, you know, he loved the show. And, you know, it was a sad thing.
So you've had no contact with him except in the press, kind of?
No. And I believe, you know, I still have this little part of me that believes somehow, someday, he's going to snap out of it, you know, because you always want to think about that with your friends. But, you know, we did an episode right afterwards where, and again, a lot of these episodes that we do, like the one we did right after 9/11, I mean, we had to do it. This is, you know, this show's our way of purging as well,
sure.
You know, and it's our way of dealing with things. And so we had to do this episode where the boys lose Chef and how do they react to that, you know? And so, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, that Matt and I are both very optimistic people. We're happy people, you know,
very
and that's,
so, yeah.
That's where I think a lot of the, you know, why the show's been able to last for 10 years is because we've seen a lot of shows come along trying to sort of copy us. And they're just cynical, and they sort of miss the whole point, you know, where it's
well,
just...
I, you know, I, there, I worship skepticism. I think skepticism is the most important thing in the world. And nothing seems to be more evil than cynicism.
Right.
And it troubles me that people don't even think about that distinction.
Yeah, absolutely.
That distinction is everything.
Absolutely.
And South Park is one of the most perfect examples of a skeptical show that's full of love. And always trust people. I mean, you have you can think better than me, but I can't bring up one plot where it is a, where people are bad.
Right.
You're always talking about the situations, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, you went to Berkeley, right?
Yeah, for a semester.
So, was your love always music?
From probably about 12 years old, that's when I discovered piano, you know, and I really just fell in love with it, and that's what I wanted to do.
And I know that you share a lot of, you're kind of a fan of Jonesy's.
Absolutely, know, like he's unbelievable.
But is bebop piano what you'd like to play?
No.
Elton John?
Yeah, I mean, I learned from watching Elton, that's how I learned, and when I was a... there's all these pictures of me that are so embarrassing now, but, you know, I was like in the junior high talent show with big glasses on and every, you know, just being little Elton. That was really my thing.
And you do almost all the singing on South Park?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. That's more out of, you know, we do all the voices, and it's not because we are absolutely running out of voices that we can do, but it's out of necessity. It is so that at 2 a.m. we can change a joke, and we don't need to call an actor and figure out when they can come in and do the line, you know.
And,
so.
Has Cartman a voice you've been doing your whole life?
No. Matt and I started doing those voices when we met in college, when we were like 19, and we would just always talk about these little kid stories or these little movies we were going to make that they weren't going to be animated. But we would talk in those kind of voices to be the kids.
Uh-huh.
So,
and if South Park hadn't caught off, it caught on that stupid bootleg thing that I saw about 30th generation.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't in with the in crowd, so mine was barely watchable. Mine was copied by a magician.
Okay? Yeah.
So you had to go far enough out that you'd gotten to a group of people you didn't care about at all.
Right.
Matt King.
Yeah, Matt showed me, yeah.
And that's the one I saw. And it was just horrendous quality, but beautifully done. If that hadn't happened, what was your plan for life?
My realistic backup plan was I was going to go teach English in Japan.
Uh-huh.
I was learning Japanese, and I was very into the Japanese culture, so I thought that's what I would go
so
to.
So you've always been a bit of a rice queen.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And now you're married a Japanese woman?
I did.
Or an American woman of Japanese ancestry?
No, she's Japanese. She's only been out here for about 3 years, actually.
And you met her here?
Yeah, I met her in L.A., yeah.
Wow.
Right during the pre-production of Team America.
Yeah.
So...
And now you're married. Is that good?
Yeah, I'm married. I don't know yet. It's only been about 6 months.
Well, you can be like Godot. He married his wife, divorced her, then married her again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea, actually. Maybe I should try that.
Get that together. And what other projects are you doing?
We actually, Matt and I sort of have our own movie company now. Paramount gave us a deal where we can start producing. So, because we figured that's the thing to kind of graduate into. Because we were watching all the producers on our shows going, wow, they don't have to do anything. I want to do that. You know, you're going to just come in and give some notes and walk away. That's great. So,
but Team America did very well, right?
But they handicapped
it.
Yeah.
Everything's turned to Vegas.
Right.
They decide how good they think you're going to do.
Right.
If you fall short of that, you failed a little,
right,
even though you're making money for everybody.
Right. I mean, the truth is anymore in Hollywood, if you break even, they're pretty happy. And mm-hmm. it did more than break even. So, I mean, it ended up being a really expensive movie, too. I mean,
sure.
No, I don't think they intended to make it.
And really stupid.
Oh, yeah, totally. Just and a really bad idea to do, too, because it did take 10 years off my life.
I guess. Yeah, I was there the last day of taping, and, yeah, you were laying on the floor face down, I think it was.
No, it took me a year to
recover. Hey, get to meet Trey.
Yeah.
Well, never mind, not today. I'll come back another day.
So, I mean, there's times when you look back on movies that were made in, like, you know, The Terror of Tiny Town or and you just look at that movie and go, what the hell were they thinking? I would just want to have been around and talk to one of those people.
Yeah.
You know that Team America is going to be, you know, people will say, oh, and this went out in a wide release?
Yeah, yeah.
And who did it?
Yeah.
And what were they doing?
And they could have computer generated everything?
It's just going to go down in history. And also, I just love, you know, movies are so afraid to take moral and political stance.
Oh, yeah.
Everything has to be wishy-washy.
Right.
And it is such a shame that America has to take its cues for movies from cartoons and puppets.
Right,
you
right.
know? Because even Michael Moore, you know, the most preachy, you know, fool that we've ever had, still likes to, you draw your own conclusions.
Right, right.
And it doesn't have that that morality play quality that really makes the point. I mean, I think at the end of Team America, there is one point on international politics
right.
that is made very clearly.
Right.
I'm talking taking all the jokes aside.
Right, you know? Right, right.
Just all that, and it's all laid out there.
Yeah.
And how many other people that you had puppets of in Team America did you run into or have any? And the Sean Penn letter. You want to talk about the Sean Penn letter?
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, Matt, this happened. It was like a week before Team America came out. And we had heard from our agent, because he was at a party, and Sean Penn was there, and he was screaming at this party, saying, I want to sue those guys. I need to sue those guys right now. Because he had just heard about someone had seen the teaser trailer
uh-huh.
and were like, hey, they made a puppet of you. And it's like, oh, that's cool. And it's like, no, I think they really make fun of you. And he was like, what? I'm going to sue them. So he was asking our agent how he could sue us. And our agent's like, I'm not sure that you can. And so a week before the movie comes out, Matt calls me and he goes, we got a letter from Sean Penn. And I was like, what? And he starts reading this letter. And it's basically, the letter is like, listen, I've been to Iraq, right? And it was like, which is what he says in the movie, right?
Exactly.
It's like, I know everything. I've been to Iraq, so I know. And Matt gets done reading the letter, and I'm like, shut up, dude. You wrote that letter. I know. You know? And he's like, no, really, Sean Penn really wrote this. And we laughed for about an hour straight. I mean, it was just the funniest thing. Just
shows you he's lost all
completely.
Sense.
Yeah.
All sense of. And did you hear from anyone else?
No, you know, actually, the only person we ran into who was like really stoked on it was Matt Damon. He loved it. Yeah,
of course. He would love it. Well, Matt Damon's a really good, smart guy.
He's a good guy.
And yeah. It's really funny that Matt Damon is smart. I mean, in this universe, that doesn't have to be that way.
Right, right, right.
But I think he's great. And what was the other thing I was going to ask you from Team America about? Was Alec Baldwin, did he want to do his voice? Is that a rumor or is that good?
That happened sort of, we were in pre-production. And we got the call saying, hey, Alec Baldwin heard that he's in this movie. He wants to do his voice. And we're like, through our agent, we had our agent tell his agent, we found someone who can do it better.
Because that was his attempt to show, oh, I'm cool.
I'm in on the joke. Yeah. And that's what, you know, all of these people have amazing publicity people, you know, that watch out for their image. You know,
yeah.
Tom Cruise has the some of the best in the world.
Well, he used to.
Yeah, he used to. And then he fired
it.
Right. And then
jumped on a couch.
Yeah, right. But
and had an invisible baby.
Every time we rip on somebody, every single time, what happens is we'll like rip on Ben Affleck, right? And we'll do a show about that. The next day, we'll see in the paper a headline in this little entertainment thing that says, Ben Affleck says South Park episode was great. And yes. It's like, that's not a news story, right? Someone got that into the newspaper. Why is that even in the paper? And it's just, you know, he needed his out there. He's in on the joke. He's in on it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's
they're not like, making fun of us.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just, it's just amazing that it's been going for 10 years. Right?
That's crazy. Yeah, we have our 10th year anniversary in September.
Well, it's just, you know, Bob Dylan said the purpose of art is to inspire. And every time a South Park comes out, I watch the South Park and want to do better stuff.
It's just
amazing how good you are. That's Trey Parker, who does South Park here with us. And I'll mention Matt Stone once more, but not in conjunction with you.
Yeah,
I'm also with Michael Goodall. And Free FM, this is Penn Jillette.